Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Professor Shane Higgins, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at the National Maternity Hospital, is with us in studio today to, well, discuss the myths around labour and delivery, spicy food and all of the different things that allegedly induce labour. Shane, that's what you're here to chat about today. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number. Childbirth is kind of surrounded by a lot of old wives' tales, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. In fact, pregnancy itself is surrounded by a lot of old wives' tales, but labour and delivery in particular, and there's hardly a day or a week goes by that I'm not asked about things like curb stepping or spicy foods or cod liver oil and all of that.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I have to say there's no evidence to support any of
right,
it.
No scientific evidence. No, right, no. Well, what myths do people have, I suppose, about labour firstly? What are those kind of misconceptions you have to...
There's ones that are really have no foundation, and they're the kind of things that might start labour off, and dates, all of that. Now, when it comes to the application of evidence, we kind of look at the quality of the evidence that supports the use or not use of something, and we try to use evidence-based practice in all disciplines of medicine. And there's a hierarchy of studies and trials that tell you this works, this doesn't work. And a lot of what patients will have heard from friends, relatives about these things, there is no scientific evidence to support them. And a lot of people think that if you get your bowel moving, and that's what these things do, they increase the transit time of the gut, that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the uterus and make you go into labour. It doesn't.
Mm.
If you want to look at what, and I use the word might because I'm a big advocate of acupuncture. I think that it has a place in Western medicine, despite its origins. And I think acupuncture could have a place. A lot of patients now, in fact, the majority of patients now do colostrum harvesting from about 37 weeks. And harvesting the colostrum releases a hormone called oxytocin, which is the primary hormone that causes your uterus to contract. So if you're close to going into labour and you do either of those two things, acupuncture, colostrum harvesting from 37 weeks, then it may have a positive knock-on effect in you going into labour.
Well, we've sort of been asking listeners about this, and we've pulled some of the kind of the maybe labour and delivery myths, and perhaps you might debunk some of them for us. Right, so your water will always break before labour starts.
Absolutely not.
Right.
So
what happens?
You know, so labour, you know, is a very complex physiological process. But the breaking of your waters is only part of the process. And your waters can break well before labour. Some patients will be admitted with preterm pre-labour rupture of membranes from 30 weeks, 28 weeks, 36 weeks. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're in labour, and it doesn't mean that labour will ensue immediately. It can often be a very, very, very protracted period of time between the rupturing of the membranes or the breaking of the waters and the onset of labour. So there's no correlation. We define labour as having painful regular uterine activity and changes to your cervix. And I won't go into the details of those changes, but you must have changes. That can happen with your membranes intact or your waters intact, or it can happen with the waters gone. It's either or.
Mm. But for most women, like for the majority of women, does that actually happen, or is it for a much less minority?
I would say it's certainly not the majority of people. I think a lot of patients will come in with pains and then their waters will break eventually, or their waters will be broken or offered to be broken for them in labour, which we call a puncture of membranes.
Yeah, because there's a text here from a listener who's wondering how much water actually comes out when your water breaks, because when you watch movies, it's always a huge amount.
Absolutely. And rare enough does it follow suit. Most patients will just notice a dampness, or their clothing is damp, or their sanitary protection is damp, and even that dampness might be an indication that your waters are gone. So if it's persistent over an hour or two or three, it's important that you go in and get it checked out.
087 1400 106. We'll move through some of the other ones. Myth or fact, second babies always arrive faster and easier?
Rule of thumb, yes. Easier, because your uterus has very good muscle memory. It remembers what to do. It does it very well. So once labour kicks off, it tends to be much more effective and efficient. So patients who are labouring for a second or subsequent time do need to bear that in mind when it comes to when do they leave to get into the hospital, because things can accelerate and escalate very quickly. So they can be at home and getting a few pains here and there, and 2 hours later they can be having a baby.
Myth or fact, spicy food, castor oil and exercise will help to naturally jumpstart labour?
No. Absolutely myth. I do recommend that all patients remain as fit as possible. It'll help you cope with the physical demands of labour. But if exercise isn't going to put you into labour, neither is cod liver oil, neither is spicy foods.
C-sections are easier to vaginal birth.
No, not at all. C-sections can be very complex and difficult procedures to do. We would always advocate patients that if there isn't a medical reason for you to have a caesarean section, you should have a vaginal birth. You should attempt a vaginal birth.
Listener here wants to know, please ask Dr. Higgins about having a baby age 35 and over, the ideal gap between pregnancies and births for mum. I turn 35 in April and have a 2.5-year-old and a 9-month-old. I find pregnancy very difficult.
Yeah, I suppose the first part of that question is age. I mean, 50% of babies born at the National Maternity Hospital are born to women over 35. 12% are born to women over 40 years of age. So age should never be a barrier to you having a baby. And I know I've said that before, and I certainly stand over it. They're not without risks, as in having babies at older age, but all pregnancies carry an element of risk. You should probably leave the best 6 to 12 months between the birth of one baby and getting pregnant again. And that's as much to do with giving you the opportunity to bond with your new baby as it is to allow you to physically, mentally recover from the birth to embark upon a subsequent pregnancy. And particularly, as this listener has said, she found them very demanding. Leaving a year at least, and then after that, it's entirely up to you as a couple.
What about after a C-section?
Same, yeah. I mean, the integrity of the uterus, the integrity of the scar, whether it's on the uterus or the abdominal wall, is intact at that point in time. So the risk to a scar in a subsequent pregnancy is in labour, not before you go into labour. So giving it that 6 to 12 months is more than adequate in terms of time.
Yeah. Childbirth, you know, has been in the news in recent days as well, even during the World Cup. I think one of the French broadcasters actually had to apologise to a Belgian soccer player because he'd left the World Cup to be at his partner's side for the birth of their baby. Yeah. But I suppose it kind of raises the point, Shane, around the importance of actually having that support during labour.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, your partner is without a doubt the best person to have there as a support person. They're there to support you physically, emotionally, but they're also there to advocate for you. And partners now invest very heavily in pregnancy. Almost all the time, partners come to the antenatal visits, they come to the scans, they come to the classes. So they're very much a part of that process. And I think they miss out, but also the patient, the woman herself, misses out enormously by not having that person there to support them. In Ireland, there is a practice of bringing a doula in as well. And some hospitals allow it and some don't. The National Maternity Hospital does allow it. So a doula is a person who's employed specifically to provide emotional support for a patient in labour. That's their sole role in a maternity hospital. And I think that goes to emphasise how important it is for that support to be there. But as I said, the partner is the best person for that.
Listener wants you to debunk their myth or fact. I hate needles. I've heard the injection for the epidural is actually the worst pain of all. Is that true?
No, absolutely not. Again, you know, epidurals are phenomenal. And I say that as a man who has had an epidural, actually, but for something unrelated to childbirth. But they are phenomenal. And 83% of women at the National Maternity Hospital who are labouring for the first time have an epidural.
So they look first, do they?
They get it. Yeah. They have one. They actually have one. And the insertion of an epidural, it's not, I wouldn't call it painful. There's local anaesthetic put into the back so you don't feel the needle going in. They're all done by very skilled professionals who have a lot of training in putting epidurals in. So no, the needle going into the back of your hand, which you get before the epidural, is probably more painful.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Listeners wondering, how many people, Shane, can I have in the delivery room with me? Because I'd like my mum to come as well as my husband, and I'm a private patient.
Nothing to do with public or private. I'll say that straight off.
Right.
But yes, we do facilitate on occasion, particularly if they... So there's a dynamic there. Over the last couple of days, I've been on the labour ward where there's a partner can't come in because of the fear of fainting. So that person then is replaced by another family member. So if there's specific dynamics that would benefit the patient to have a second person there, and we do allow doulas in with partners, and sometimes we allow another member of the family, like a sister or a mother, in with the patient.
Many women want that.
No, it's a very small number. In fact, you might only get a couple of people a week who would like to have a second person in with them. But if it's felt that that's in the best interest of the patient, then absolutely we'll do everything we can to facilitate it.
And just when you mentioned the partner fainting, does that happen frequently?
It does. It happens. I won't say frequently, but it's it's a very overwhelming situation. There's a lot of senses that are affronted, you know, when you're in the birthing suite and if you're in theatre for a cesarean section. So we're very conscious of partners remaining well and upright. And if we get a sense at all, we'll sit them down, we'll give them water. Fainting isn't that unusual in that circumstances, and nobody should be embarrassed by it either.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Professor Shane Higgins, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist at the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street in Dublin. If you want to listen back to all of our chats, conversations with Shane, all on the Go Loud app, subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. You can simply find Making Babies.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.